I may disagree with what you have to say entirely. I may find it abhorrent, but I will go in my grave defending your right to say it.
World is full of people who are very angry.
Rhetoric has become so extreme that it is not causing violence. And therefore, do we then say free speech is dead?
They are suppressing speech in public view. And they're doing that in the real world. So as a tactic of riot control, 504,000 people went to the Thompson concert in Croatia, which was pro-Christian values, pro-family values, pro-Croatia, and also pro-Europe, which I found very, very interesting. And actually, right now, there is also another pro-speech rally, in fact, in this instance, which is coming to the UK on September the 13th, 2025. And that's going to be very interesting.
Welcome to Influential Visions. Here we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. Here is your host, Nathaniel Schooler.
Is free speech dying or is it dead already? This is a massive topic. Stephen and I are going to talk about this for around 30 minutes. If you don't know him, you could Google him, Stephen J. Manning. He built a very, very large marketing business back in the 80s and 90s. And he's a well-renowned business leader. You find it interesting, make sure you subscribe to the channel and do drop your comments in, because we'd love to hear about your opinion, really. So, what do you think, Steve? Do you think we're being massively censored at the moment? What's the deal when it comes to free speech?
Well, depending upon who you listen to, we are being massively censored or not censored sufficiently. And so we've gone from where free speech, certainly in the United States, is a very core concept of democracy. In fact, the First Amendment may be the pillar of democracy as we used to know it and used to accept it, which is no longer the case. It's challenged. It's not sacrosanct. There was a time where, the vernacular is, I may disagree with what you have to say entirely. I may find it abhorrent, but I will go in my grave defending your right to say it. That would be the intended limits or no limits of free speech when this country was founded mere 250 years ago. The test of free speech, as held by the courts, some forever and ever had been, you can say anything you really want to say. By the way, there's a little problem there when you with your speech actually quite literally causes injury to someone else, but I'll address that in a moment. The test was very simple. You can say anything you want to say, but you can't yell fire in a crowded theater, because that has a very, very, very dramatic negative consequence to everyone. So, hey, I'm just exercising my right of free speech. We hear that every day a thousand times in the news in the United States. When the misanthrope tries to kill a police officer on the corner on the street while screaming at him, the argument is not that he tried to commit murder. He was expressing his right to free speech. That would be the absurd end of the pendulum swing, which we experience here. The question is, where is free speech today? Where is it going to go? And all of a sudden, we find ourselves with free speech as a multi-pronged discussion. You need to break it down. It's no longer free speech is guaranteed by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Certainly in the U.K., your old stomping grounds, free speech is an absurd idea. Absurd to the point where people, they're trying to legislate thought. The communists did that really well, but that kind of faded off along with Glasnost. But, you legislating what people think is astounding. Legislating what people say Oh my goodness, that's where we are today. And again, it's gone from a hardcore pillar concept to what is more often than not, I am very sorry to say, it's pretty much of a nuisance. It's certainly in the United States of America, and a nuisance of which I feel terrible about for a couple of different reasons. I grew up in a communist country where there was no such thing as free speech, there was no such thing as due process. There wasn't. We were afraid to speak in your own living room because someone passing by in the street may overhear you state something that is controversial. Hey, you say that, gets out, dead, is beaten to death, tortured to death. Of course, the UK is making a yeoman's effort to get back there. One of the cornerstones of communist regimes to their survival was their ability to absolutely control thought or control freedom of expression. How about doing that in good old England in 2025? How absurd is that? How terrible is that? Now, the other side, because, you know, there are two sides to the thinnest pancake, and we're not going to have a discourse unless there's another side. What is happening in good old England today to cause a body of ostensibly smart people to create legislation to stifle thought? A discussion for another time. In the United States, I speak more of authoritatively about that. Also, in discussion on free speech, is going multi-pronged. Censorship, your question. What is the government doing? What should they do in influencing the online platforms? Can they censor the online platforms? Do the online platforms censor themselves? And if they do, what are those biases? And
well, that's I've got to interrupt you there, because it's important, very important that you said that, because actually I've noticed a visible killing of reach when it comes to certain topics on LinkedIn in particular. And I actually posted a video, or maybe it was just a post, and they automatically turn now the comments off on my posts, because I posted a controversial topic, which I thought was very interesting, because they don't want those kind of conversations, which I thought that was quite interesting as well, that they're trying to kill these conversations when actually they want people to be on the platform and have conversations, but yet they want to kill specific topics. So I think you just have to be very careful of what you're going to say. But being in social media a few years ago, I understand you have to be careful with what you say. I mean, you can't, there are certain things that you just don't say, right? But common sense goes out the window when people are mad. And this is a big problem. Is world is full of people who are very angry right now, because they're angry for a number of reasons. Angry mainly because people don't listen to them, I think, is certainly one of the reasons. And social media actually makes that worse, because they think people are listening, but actually then when their reach is killed, then it just makes it worse. So I don't know. I think we're in a very precarious position right now. I think that there are certain elements within the UK society that are, I would say, very dangerous. And I think that this explains why certain free speech is being censored or controlled in the real world, because actually they don't want to inflame certain minorities, I would say, within the country, but they're not minorities within certain areas. But I think there is a very big move for free speech in the Christian world at the moment. In particular, there's been a huge, the largest concert within the world. 504,000 people went to the Thompson concert in Croatia, which was pro-Christian values, pro-family values, pro-Croatia, and also pro-Europe, which I found very, very interesting. And And actually, right now, there is also another pro-speech rally, in fact, in this instance, which is coming to the UK on September the 13th, 2025. And that's going to be very interesting. Apparently, people from New Zealand are flying over there because New Zealand is a hub for Christians since the missionaries went over there and converted a huge proportion of the people to become Christians. I think it's going to be an interesting run up to 2026, in my opinion. Interesting end to the year.
You said a lot of things to unpack in just a minute or two because there's a lot there. A comment. I can't help myself. I tell you that I have a very long-standing belief that common sense, which I hear, it's only common sense. Tell you what common sense is. Common sense is that which tells us that the earth is flat. So I look at common sense as, well, that might be your most ordinary thought on the matter. Because I can argue that obviously the earth is flat, isn't it? I can see it. Common sense is that which tells us that the earth is flat. Policing social media. As you know, I've been around that world since the very, very beginning of Twitter, beginning of Facebook, and tying that what people want to be heard. I wear this with a badge of honor, as I have been very critical of social media. I think social media is a cancer of the intellect. In fact, social media has done more to hurt the entire social paradigm, educational paradigm, even economic paradigm, than any despot has done, could have done. In fact, more so than political correctness. Political correctness is an enormously metastasized cancer of the intellect in the United States. Imagine we beat that with social media. Now, a comment about a free speech event in London. Let me cut to the chase. How could that go wrong? We talk a lot about the pendulum swinging to the extremes. I'm big on pendulums, discussing pendulum swings in a whole lot of ways. And then, of course, fortunately, the pendulum swings and settles to what some of us call a regression to the mean. It was far right, far left, it's all screaming. And then it settles down in here somewhere. If it does not, you can't govern. If it does not, I don't know, maybe Rousseau, somebody said something brilliant. I don't know if it was him, but somebody said that, you know, our nation will perish in the flames generated by heat of its own passions. If you have unbridled heat or passion, unbridled, unchanneled, we're going to just blow ourselves up in short term. So there has to be, quoting one of the most brilliant philosophers of all time, my mother, she was fond of saying, you know, honey, there's a limit to everything. And I challenged that since I began talking. And occasionally the challenges went a little too far, where my brilliant, the very elegant mom would never raise her voice, would gently give me a slap across the head just to set my thinking straight. God bless her. I learned how to hit a topspin backhand from her when she'd slap me across the face, then hit a backhand across my face so I don't get whiplash. There are limits to everything. The question is, how do you limit free speech, which is such a cornerstone? I come from a communist country, as I said, where there are no speech. It took me years until we settled in the land of opportunity, the United States, to begin to feel that speaking freely is a good thing. So I watched my father being tortured near death recurringly for expressing his dislike for the government because he was a reactionary. He was an outspoken reactionary. And, you know, so free speech is kind of like, it's kind of called an endless dream at this point. Yeah. And we all have our own ideas what the heck it should be. And, you know, you talk about some core idea. People are angry. They want to be heard. Now, you and I talk about social media and then AI, the biggest engine in the history of the world, being kind of a democratization of all this. If I can make a post on Facebook, I am relevant. I exist. And therefore, I should be heard. Of course, 99% of the posts nobody reads except the person posts it. But I'm good. And I talk about the ultimate, TikTok. I know how to spell TikTok. I know there's no C in the word TikTok. Therefore, I'm creative. How's that for a mindless sleep in terms of speech? And I'm really angry I'm not being heard. The whole idea of not being heard is another topic you and I talk about, which is what triggers people. This incredible anger, the degree of expression, what triggers them? Well, everybody wants to be heard, wants to be seen, and all of that. Well, I think that's the bulk of the folks. It's just, hey,
but also,
shit this.
I'm gonna.
There's one thing about triggering that. There is a, I hate to use the word class, but it's a class of people. I call those people who can think, and some can even chew gum at the same time, who are triggered because they feel impotent in the face of world events. I can't do anything about it, so I might as well scream, yell, carry on. But I'm triggered because I can't. I am just so distressed. I'm angry. Can't do anything about it. So I got, you know what? I'm going to go burn down your Tesla because I'm angry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But there's so much you said there, and I'm just gonna focus on the one thing that really stands out to me at the moment is the way that they are suppressing speech in public view. And they're doing that in the real world. So as a tactic of riot control. So for example, say you have a very large group who believe in X, and then you have a number of people that believe in Y. They will actually arrest the people who believe in Y to prevent civil unrest. And this is basically what's happening within the United Kingdom. There's been if I said what has actually been happening there and how many people are on terrorist watch list, yeah, people would panic and run for the hills, yeah. It's a very, very worrying time right now. I'm going to exercise my free speech right now and say that the Macron, the French chap that went over and spoke to the Prime Minister the other day, I could not believe that he actually said, "Oh yes, we'll help with the boats and this and that." And basically, we're giving them £400 million. £400 million to help with something they were supposed to be doing in the first place, right? And the French sense of humor is so ridiculous that they've given us a loan of the Bayeux tapestry, which means that I don't know what message Macron is sending by lending us the Bayeux tapestry. I think it was pre Starmer's time. I think they might have agreed on that about 4 years ago, from what I gather. But that depicts Harold getting shot in the eye in the Battle of Hastings, which I find particularly interesting. But it's like, hold on a minute. We're gonna take some of the people that are arriving in these boats, and we're gonna take some of them back. But we're not gonna deal with the whole problem. And it's like, I don't know quite what is actually going on within the government of the United Kingdom to really think that is the solution to this massive, massive problem. When it is not, the solution is a very big look at where's the money going, who's funding this, who's funding that, and all of these things are highly relevant to the free speech, and suppressing the voice of reason is basically what they're doing, because somehow there's some agenda that nobody talks about. We don't quite know who's funding it, or we sort of do. And I find the whole world particularly, it's a very strange place, but we have Fortunately, sorry, we have X, which is one of the best platforms out there, because actually you can look at both sides to every argument. You can do your research. You can look at that and you can understand more about what is going on. And certainly within Europe, there are a number of countries that are closing borders, that are basically really taking the responsibilities that we should have actually been keeping an eye on this 10 years ago and doing something. But back then, everyone was so left. Everyone was left. Yeah, everyone, let them all in. It doesn't matter. And now we're having to pay. This is the problem. We're having to pay money for all of these people. And it's like, it'd be cheaper for them to stay where they are and we'll just send them money. Yeah. Then allow them here and then have civil unrest because people aren't happy anymore and the crime rate's gone through the roof. Like, I'm in disbelief if I'm brutally honest.
You know, the Macron thing, I'm giggling because in deference to a dear friend of mine who was a dermatologist, a doctor, whom I care for deeply, and it's very important in my life. Too many years spent in the sun, your dermatologist becomes your best friend. Macron is kind of like a really bad dermatological thing. Hey, doctor, I got the spot here. Look, it's really dry. So doctor says, no problem. I have got a cream and we'll put it on there and it'll make it wet. It'll go away. And you're back there 3 weeks later to say, it's really wet. It's not drying up. Okay, no problem. I got this other cream that's make it dry. And 4 months later, you go back there and you have a squamous cell carcinoma that you should have dealt with 3 months ago. That's Macron. To some extent, I appreciate Macron to a great extent. I think he's a clown often enough. He plays to an audience, which is terrible. Going back to the root issues on speech, is it dead? Is it dying? There's a couple areas of that really preoccupy me in a big way. One of them, of course, we just touched upon censorship. The government, the platforms. So the platforms censor themselves. And of course, we have this refuge. Well, you know, it's an algorithm. Now, you and I have been around algorithms since the beginning of time. There's a man and a woman over there that is, in fact, feeding stuff in there, pushing a narrative different than the other narrative. I have an insight into some of the platforms without telling long stories. And I get it. It's very interesting when you have a cabal of three people who can influence genuine influence on political events in the United States of America. One of the things that I am really preoccupied by it, in terms of hate speech dying or dead, it has to do with, of course, hate speech and the legal boundaries of that. You know, that's one, that's just an overriding idea. Now, hate speech is broadly protected, certainly by our First Amendment, unless, as I said earlier, it is silence, it incites violence, that becomes a true threat. Now, the problem is the extremists in this country, the rhetoric has become so extreme that it is not causing violence. And therefore, do we then say free speech is dead? Because we can no longer protect hate speech, and we should not protect hate speech. There are limits to everything, quoting my mom, and now the other thinkers thereafter. Of course, the Europeans are trying to ban hate speech. The question is, you can ban certain hate speech. That is, in fact, inciting violence, but don't tell me what to think and how to think. One of the thing that really bugs me even more is restrictions on educational content. Universities, by definition, are supposed to foster free thought, free speech, innovation, radical thinking, name it. What happens when it becomes hardcore institutionalized indoctrination? 92% of people teaching in U.S. colleges universities are absolutely self-professed liberals or ultra-liberals. 98% contribute only to ultra-liberal causes. Okay, go send your kids there to learn about balance in anything in your life. No, it's an indoctrination silo is what it is. So that is something that, yeah, free speech at university level is absolutely dead. Dead because it's just channeled one way. It's one-way traffic, okay?
Yeah.
And, okay, we can't change that because we can't protect children from having these divisive ideologies thrown at them. When those become incendiary and causing great harm to the population, the answer is yes. We need to take a look at that, okay? Go right ahead and chill the free speech part where I'm going to kill you because I don't agree with what you have to say, and I don't, well, it's gone beyond that. You can't even say it. You want to be a tenured professor anywhere? Good luck with that. World's come to a weird place where a tenured guy can't write a book the way he wants to. He's writing a book saying, who's going to read this and do I get to keep my job? Okay? It's astounding to me. The whole campus speech paradigm, it really, really, really bothers me the most. Okay? Instead of emphasizing open discourse, not there. In fact, not there at all. Then, of course, the question is, do we then go to all these campuses and say, we limit hate speech? You may not express hate speech. Now, there is a Hobson's choice that I hope and pray that they are very, very smart people, much, much, much smarter than I am, spend a lot of nighttime hours trying to think about how to mitigate that before we just fall off the cliff. And the cliff is where 70% of postgraduate students in the United States of America don't know what the Holocaust was, but they scream intifada. 40% of advanced degrees people just out of school, they just got the master's degrees. 40% of them believe that the Holocaust was a hoax, just didn't happen. Okay, now, to do that is to invite it to happen again, which of course just did a short year and a half ago. We just experienced another Holocaust. As you know, I write a bunch about that, and I write a bunch about all the Holocausts since then around the world, including one that's being prosecuted today as you and I speak, where, hey, there's a reason why there are crematoria outside a couple labor camps in eastern China. There's only 1.5 million people in those camps.
I know.
So there's a Holocaust for you. But you know what? Again, going back, is free speech dead? In my humble opinion, it's absolutely moribund, man. It is dying.
Yeah.
It is dying. How do we fix it? How do we give a voice to smart people? How do we give you a bigger voice? How do we give a bigger voice to some of the great people that you and I talk to, spend time with, do roundtables and so on, who are enlightened? How do we create that environment? I don't know how to do that. But I'll tell you what, as I said in this long interview on a radio thing, I said, you know, I used to believe, contrary to my nature is I'm going to take a baseball bat and tell you what I really think. You know, we're going to have an argument. You're going to lose this argument because I'm going to beat you. I have grown to understand that the old story, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. So I write, I express, and so on. I don't know how to tell you this, but words, in fact, break your bones today. Cancel culture. They, in fact, I express something I think. Now, you don't have to like it. You don't have to believe it. You can ignore me. You say, that guy's an idiot, a barely functioning idiot. That's not what happens. Now we are triggered to really cancel your sorry self. And by that, you're going to lose your job. You're going to lose your tenure. You're going to lose your livelihood. And we will burn your house down. Why? Because I have an idiotic take on something that you don't like. That would be the pendulum that allows for no discourse whatsoever. Free speech, in the United States of America, we no longer have social or civil discourse. We have screaming. We have mindless screaming. And if I can out-scream you and I find a bigger audience on X or whatever, my opinion counts more than yours.
Yeah. It's
not that I'm upset about this.
I'm upset about it, but it's not really a surprise, because when the political sphere learned how to basically create fear-based messaging, something happened then. Something happened when Donald Trump got into power. And there were lots of messages. The first time he got into power, Cambridge Analytica was there, right? And they were very relevant to that campaign and to other campaigns around the world. And at that time, there was a big extraction of data that enabled the wise to become better at triggering people. And now that has evolved into basically something that has created a world that's unrecognizable. When you have people at top university, Oxford in the United Kingdom, had a guest, which I mentioned on the last podcast we did, they had a guest who was the son of the founder of Hamas, right? And he was talking about why he disagrees with everything that's been happening and da da da. And the people at Oxford basically would not listen to what he had to say. He had to change what he was saying because he was being cancelled, right? And this is not just on social media where people are being cancelled, but it is also social media is very bad because it's an echo chamber, right? So the algorithms are designed by teams and teams of people. And if you're listening to this and you've never watched Social Dilemma, the film, it's old now, but there are teams and teams and teams of people on every one of these applications to retain concentration, control you to your attention. That's what I was trying to say. Retain your attention so that you remain on the platform for as long as possible. And with some people, it is going to be, they love confrontation. They want to argue, etc. But also there are other people who don't want to argue, right? They don't want to have a conversation. They want the same opinion that they have to be in front of them. So you've got polarizing views, which can be completely hidden from you based upon your user behavior and how you engage with that application, which is there. And it's almost like it is all the time learning from you. Facebook and Twitter and X and whatever and LinkedIn, they know more about you than probably your wife or your husband, right? And that's how insane we are right now. There's so much information that is being generated by us, and these applications are fueling the free speech death or the increase in free speech. So maybe it's our job to get involved in more controversial conversations to improve our algorithms.
A couple of weeks ago, Salman Rushdie tried to deliver a speech in the college, and he was attacked on stage. Well, he did have security because he had the temerity to write Satanic Verses, otherwise a lousy book, years ago. The protection he received was so minimal, it was scary. But that hate overcomes and is likely to overcome generationally. His right to free speech. But, you know, it, it's the question is, how do you reverse a runaway train? How do you do that? How do you impact it, and what level do you impact it? Where do you impact it? 8-year-old little girl, 8 and a half, walks into the store with a mom. They're going to buy a dress. And she wants that dress. She knows what she wants. She's 9. Right? It's amazing, isn't it? And then they're going to buy a dress. It's a given. And mom says, I think that pink dress would be great. And the kid says, no. Blue. Why? ChatGPT told me I look better in blue. Okay, so where do you begin the reversed, well, I don't want to call it indoctrination, but where do you begin the truth-telling? Because by 9 years old, that parent is kind of running a tad behind technology. The kid is already addicted. The kid is an amphetamine. It's called technology. That child insisted, and guess what? She got the blue dress. I was there. I saw it. And I had to force myself not to look at the mother and say, why did you have this child? You know? And by the way, 9 years old, how does she have access to this? I can't hear you.
Sorry about that. I muted my microphone because I didn't want to make any noise because I had to put my light on and I didn't want to say to Alexa, turn the, don't want to talk to you, Alexa. I didn't want to
You just wanted to tune me out.
No. I was listening. But it's interesting because I've been doing some design work on our header and helping a friend of mine with his scooter business. And I went to Gemini and I uploaded an image and I said, hey, can you help me with this? But Gemini gave me the worst design advice known to man for about half an hour until I said, no. I want to put this here, and this here. And then Gemini said, yes, you are right. Okay. So what this means is children need to understand they have to question these language models. They cannot accept ChatGPT, Gemini, Grok, and all these others. They can't accept it as fact until they have actually explored all the avenues. Nathaniel. And this goes for that child. That mother needs to learn how to explain this to the child, you know?
You are asking that child something your child not capable of, and I hate to tell you this, but 95% of mothers are clueless. You know,
that's very true.
The overwhelming percentage of the people are frightened of AI. And they don't really fundamentally understand it. And they don't understand the enormous potential and the enormous potential for being deleterious to life, period. Very true. We have been in an AI world and a big data world since maybe 1980. You know, yeah. I mean, we've been this a long time. We get it. And I fancy myself as knowing a fair bunch about AI, and it doesn't mean I'm not spellbound every day by something I discover. And you know, it's an amazing thing to me, and I will repeat this because I'm fond of this story. When I discovered Grok, I said, whoa, Elon just built this little computer for $2 or $3 billion and is about a third done. So that's got potential. And I decided to see the development part of it. And my first hand little experiment is I came up with a really convoluted, silly question. It's convoluted. It's a couple, there's 2 or 3 dimensions that don't really gel. So I posed that to Grok. And man, I got 2 pages of stuff from this perspective, that perspective. And then Grok told me that assuming I understand your perspective based on your question. There we go. Now, if I'm wrong in understanding your perspective, This is another, boom. I said, oh, my God, I don't have half hour reading. I repeat that question every 2 days. Identical question. By the way, I copy the text and put it in a Word doc. Cool. And then I go ahead and compare them. And I say, I'm so dead. I don't get it. What happens in 48 hours is astounding.
It's amazing.
As Michael says, more data added to the data banks of the world yesterday, the one day, than the sum total data added in the history of mankind. That's the rate of growth. I'll go explain that to a kid who, she did get the blue dress, not the pink dress. It's all her stuff. Mom gave in. ChatGPT knows better.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it, Steve? I mean, I did some research earlier. I asked Gemini some questions. Did some deep research, right? And actually, it's frightening when you look at the the dumbing down of brain cells, right? Cognition. It's actually frightening, basically. Students who frequently check social media while studying score 20% lower on exams is one of the things. And students who check social media more than 5 times daily are 35% more likely to have lower grades, which I thought was pretty, pretty worrying, actually. But it says here, companies lose approximately $650 billion annually due to workplace social media distractions, basically. And that's mainly because it takes employees 23 minutes to refocus back to the task that they were doing before they're distracted. So, I mean, that can be applied to anything.
I can relate that going backwards. And I have to give you another graph with Gemini story. But you remember when we discovered that data's king. That was only a few years ago. That was not a long time ago, data's king. And then we started flooding people with data. And, of course, we flooded the working population data, and then we flooded them with tools to work with the data. Oh, cloud computing, what a godsend. I can take all this data, and it's done. I can get it done. And we empowered our employee database, employee bodies, to make use of incredible data, the data analytics, all of that, and look at the great work product. Our product was, in fact, fantastic. There is now a significant, I hate to call it, a cottage industry, of people going to big old companies, and their job is to figure out how to limit or reduce the amount of data available to their people. Because it's turned into a terrible imbalance of quality and quantity. Okay, maybe that is a brilliant thing you came up with. Unfortunately, the factory burnt down because that's not the focus here. So there's actually an industry of people who are educating companies how to take back data. Now, as that pendulum swings, you now have AI. If you want a sobering experience, I can go to Grok or Gemini or whatever and ask a simple question. And I asked this on account of somebody declared me that. I said, am I a marginally functioning imbecile? Okay. Because I held forth on a proposition that to me just made no sense at all. And I couldn't be swayed to understand a nonsensical explanation I was getting. And perhaps I said, I just don't get it. I don't have it. And the guy said, you're a marginally functioning imbecile. I said, well, perhaps it is. Well, you know what? I couldn't sleep, so I asked Grok. And I went to Gemini as Gemini. And I am just enjoying the fruits of those queries to no end. And by the way, what's funny is that at some point in the long string of feedback, I said, by the way, do you know that I actually invented a new chocolate chip ice cream? And what is new about it? I'm putting in the chocolate grains are 1.5 grams instead of 1 gram. Go query it. Who invented the chocolate chip ice cream with that? I did. But our core topic about freedom of speech, and I am very unhappy to state again that sometimes I think it's a death knell. Some of the stuff we're doing is a death knell of free speech. The day we kill free speech, what are we going to do next? Kill the wheel, the fire? What are we going to do next? Are we going to just, why don't you shut at the universities? Let's keep some schools open that teach math, engineering, and the chemistry, and physics, and everything else. You can just close it out. No need. Because we still need people to build bridges and roads and airplanes. But other than that, we don't. None of this. You and I talking? Hey, if we're not talking about another way to split the atom, there's no point listening to us, is there now? So
no.
It's. I think the dark side of it, to me, is immense.
Yeah. Well, I agree. I mean, I think that's another reason why we created Monday Influencer, so people don't miss some of these really important things. And that's one reason we do these interviews, to grow our, well, certainly grow my brain, talk about these kind of things, and also to make people aware of what we're doing over there. Because a few years ago, before I started interviewing people, I really wanted to know so much. I had so many questions about marketing, business, branding, all the things that you and I talk about, and all the topics that are in Monday Influencer. At one point, I knew nothing about these things. And I'm really enjoying continuing that legacy and actually making those 500 plus audios available to people, and all of the worksheets, checklists, and all this other stuff, plus the career advisory and the other amazing thing, which is the weekly digest and abstracts, are so powerful. The feedback that we're receiving from those, we're so grateful for. And if you're listening to this and you're like, what the hell is Monday Influencer? Go to mondayinfluencer.com and sign up for a $1 trial. That's your risk, $1, right? And it's a great pleasure to work with you on this, Steve. And if you're listening to this and you're in education and you want some more amazing content for your platform, we can help you with that as well, because we've got so many interviews with so many experts like Steve, like Michael Tobin, CBE, all these amazing people that actually. We're becoming very well known for this, and so many people really love what we're doing. So do reach out to me or to Stephen here, and we'd love to hear from you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Ciao.
Thanks very much for listening to Influential Visions. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections. And don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thanks.